There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
And we're joined by Aklam, who is here from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, because it's that time of the week again, isn't it?
The Radio Book Club. Members only.
Ramadan Kareem.
Thank you. Same to you.
I've been dying to say that.
Have you? Yeah.
We haven't had anyone in the studio who is actually fasting.
Oh, really? Am I the first one?
You are the first. How's it going?
Good. I'll try to keep my energy levels higher.
Well, you seem just fine to us so far.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into book news, first of all, the Netflix of books has launched in Australia. And I think whenever you see anything with the word Netflix in, you go, what's this then?
I know.
I think
that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to... I think it's far from Netflix, but they're trying to piggyback off of the success of Netflix.
Ooh, I feel like you don't like this already.
It's just that Netflix has original shows, for example. Is this platform going to be a publishing platform?
Oh, I think it might be in the future, maybe.
Oh, that would be interesting. I think if it was, that would be interesting. Whether I'd be in a hurry to switch my hard copies for e-copies, I'm not sure. But I am warming up to e-books, so I would do that in addition. But any effort to try to get books to non-readers is good.
Why are you just warming up to e-books? Why has it took you so long?
I don't know. I used to like to make up my own mind, read the book and hear my own voices and make up my own characters. But you don't. There's so much to read. Maybe it's just my job. I don't know. But there's just so much to read and be aware of. You don't always have time. So in the car is a really good time to make use of listening. And the more I've done that, the more, I've warmed up to it. And actually, it's great. It is about, we were here on DubaiEye on Saturday on Talking of Books. We spoke with Tariq Bulbul, who started Book Lava. It's an audiobooks platform in Arabic. And he was saying it's about the content. You know, it's not necessarily about how you consume it. I guess... I can agree with that.
Well, this is a new ebook and audiobook membership service. It's launched in Australia this week, but they've already got it in the UK, and it launched in November in the UK, but it began in the Netherlands, so we've got it in three different places now. Mm-hmm. And it's called Book Choice, and it allows you to download 8 audiobooks and 8 ebooks for 14 dirhams a month, which is pretty cheap.
Yeah, it sounds cheap.
Yeah, that's great.
If you think how much it would cost you to buy a book, how much are they these days? About 49 dirhams?
Something like that, from 40 and
that's
to 60.
That's a paperback, isn't it? Yeah, a hardback.
Can go up
more,
to 100 and 100 mm-hmm. or more.
So this service, it focuses on bestsellers and cult classics. And once you access a book, it's available for 12 months on your device.
Or if you download them, then you can keep them until you want to get rid of them.
Right.
Bookchoice.com. I was looking on there this morning. It's quite clean and easy to navigate. I do quite like it. Would you use it, do you think?
Maybe. I'll never say never. Here I am listening to audiobooks, so who knows?
Because there's some books as well, I find, that you would not necessarily want to have on your bookshelf forever.
Yeah.
There might be books that you kind of want to read, but you don't want everyone to know that you read them.
What kind of books are those?
The latest rom-com. You know, like the lightweight books that you don't... They're not going to stay on your bookcase forever. They're like...
Why, it's not cool to read them?
Gone Girl, Girl on a Train, those kind of books.
Yeah, but the danger with these things also is, will the algorithms box you in? Because I like, having open options and seeing everything. But once you start to select a certain type of book, then they start to... recommend more of the same, and then eventually you just don't see anything else.
Your life's full of murder.
Yeah.
So they kind of zone in on what you like.
Yeah.
And then
they recommend more and more of what you like, and then you stop having clarity of what else is
that a bad thing though? I mean, if it's your taste and the
depends.
Coming up with all these new books.
Yeah, but I depends on if you like that, then that's great. But I myself would like to see everything, to see what's out there, what's new, because you never know what you might end up liking. Mm. And I like to experiment.
Mm, I don't like to be pigeonholed either.
Yeah.
You don't like being told what to read?
No. Because I don't like when they do that on Netflix, actually. I don't like it when they suggest things for you. Do you know what?
Yeah.
I just want to go to documentaries and I want to look through. Thank you very much.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. But they did say that they are focused on reaching non-typical book buyers and lapsed readers. So they're not necessarily going after... the guys who are reading 4 books a week, like yourself, they're going after Mark Lloyd, who's doing one biography a year.
Yeah. In fact, I'm going on my holidays in 2 weeks. I wonder who I will read this year.
Oh.
It was Phil Collins last year.
Mm.
So I've got to find a musical personality who's written an autobiography.
One biography a year, and you went for Phil Collins.
I have a musical one for you today.
Have you? Oh, great.
I do.
Awesome.
I do.
Perfect timing.
Perfect.
Like we planned it.
Yes.
Anyway, I had to work this out. Book Choice, they say they've got 40,000 paid members, and I worked that out, 560,000 dirhams a month they've got coming in. This is a pretty good idea.
It's big money, isn't it?
All the
big
success.
Money. It's big money. Yeah, you can let us know your thoughts on that if you like to. Whilst we go into battle.
Yes, let's do it.
Misanthropic. Ignominy. Admonish. Rapacious. Incomprehensibilities. Word for the week.
Normally I feel quite nervous, not this week.
Yeah. Shall I tell Aflam the story? I was feeling really, really confident. I knew I'd actually written it on my script where I was going to try. And you know me, I don't write things down. I just let them come out. And I'd written it on my script. I thought, I'm going to nail this. I'm really going to nail it. And I stumbled a bit over the word, didn't I? And I'd written it out phonetically so I wouldn't mess it up. And I messed it up.
Had you really written it out phonetically?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, because it's not an easy word, is it? It's a tricky word.
Remind us what you went for.
I went for extemporaneous, which is off the cuff or done without preparation.
Extemporaneous.
Would you like to go first? I think people will be dying to hear your...
No, yours is first.
Oh, it is.
Do you want me to change it?
Yeah.
Yeah? All right, let's change it so that Mark Lloyd goes first, shall we? There we go.
Because you've teased it so well.
Yeah. All right, Mark Lloyd first. Have a listen to this.
Will you be doing an out-of-office reply?
Now, I've never actually done one of these before, an out-of-office reply. You know, I don't know what I'd actually put on it. Am I on annual leave? Knowing me, I'd put something on there that's totally extemporaneous.
No way!
Thank you, Marcus.
No way!
Thank you, Marcus.
You need to find the original version.
Some creative editing there. Creative.
We will have no cheating today, Mark Lloyd.
That was seamless, wasn't it?
Aflam, I want you to...
I need proof of the original.
We need proof of the original, please. You need to discount everything you just heard. Like a jury. Forget what you just heard.
I thought it was fantastic. You know, maybe I imagined the fact that I stumbled over the word. I imagined
it. Did you know he was going to edit that? Did you go in there and ask him?
Well, you know, I slipped in 50 dirhams.
Unbelievable! The lengths you'll go to win this.
Good use of sentence, though, even if you had stumbled.
Yeah, what about the actual context?
Yeah, it made perfect sense in context.
So I'm talking about my phone leaving an out-of-office message and, you know, being kind of off the cuff with it.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
No, context is good.
Thank you very much.
Let's hear Steph.
All right, Steph, here we go.
The boss comes, get out me golden all card, no credit. So I looked at the bus driver and he kind of waved me on. Two stops before I get to my stop, an inspector gets on the bus and he says, card? And I go, I don't have any credit on my card. And he goes, get off the bus. I get a 220 dirham fine. It was an extemporaneous decision that I regret now because a 4 dirham bus ride ended up costing me 220 dirhams.
And it's a true story. Last night on my way home, my car broke down and I thought, I'm going to get the bus.
220 dirhams later.
Yeah. Oh, wow. We've got the original here if you want to hear
Hang on. What did you think of my use of it?
I thought A for storytelling.
She's great, a good storyteller.
It's a great storytelling skill. I'm wondering if you used the word in its correct meaning or as spontaneous. Off the cuff kind of is not prepping in advance or kind of, but you kind of used it to sound like spontaneous.
Yeah.
That's right. What I got.
Let's have a listen to my unedited version. This is what actually came out of my mouth live on air.
Okay.
Will you be doing an out-of-office reply?
Now, I've never actually done one of these before, an out-of-office reply. You know, I don't know what I'd actually put on it. Am I on annual leave? Knowing me, I'd put something on there that's totally extemporaneous.
So you just think of it on the spot.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, Mark. Sorry.
Do I win?
Steph wins.
Yay!
After all that cheating, you let her win. You let her win.
You can talk about cheating. You should be ashamed of yourself.
You couldn't even say the word.
Sorry, Mark.
All right.
It's over for you. He hasn't even got my winning stab ready. That's what he's messing around with over there now.
Hang on. I've got it now. Bask in your glory, Steph.
And the winner is Steph Bergen.
Thank you. Thank you. It was worth the fine.
Okay, so we're gonna... true story and a good storyteller, yeah. So you get it. Yeah.
Thank you so much. First time I've won.
Right, we've got a new word for the week. What's it going to be?
This week I've got a word which is gesticulate. Gesticulate, so to use gestures when talking, especially when excited about getting ideas across.
I've used this before.
So it's just, is it gesticulate or gesticulate?
Gesticulate.
Gesticulate.
Well, okay. That's how we say it in Geordie. I am going to be really good with this.
Okay, good. You know the word already.
I know it, and yeah. I'm confident.
Okay, well, I'm sure Mark can do some very creative editing again next week. So that's it. Gesticulate, our word for the week next week.
It makes me wonder if things that you hear are true, doesn't it? You know when you hear that edit done so well of Mark Lloyd cheating there?
I know.
Scary.
It just shows the skills of Marcus who's sat behind
terrifying.
That mixing desk there.
Never let him work for Donald Trump.
Fantastic creative editing. Right then, we're going to be getting into our books proper in just a second, starting with a book that I think is going to split opinions. That's coming next.
The Radio Book Club. Members only.
We've got Atlan Mert joining us next. She's the Festival Director for the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, and we do this every Monday.
The Radio Book Club. Members only.
Now then, your first book is a book to inspire us to do a little bit of travelling.
Yes. This week I've got Travels on My Elephant by Mark Shand, who you've just told me is related to the royal family.
Yes, because my first thoughts about this book, I hate the idea of a man who buys an elephant to take an 800-mile trip across India.
Okay.
Like, who does that? We know that we shouldn't be riding elephants and all of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. On further inspection, he was actively involved in the conservation of the Asian elephant. He co-founded a charity called Elephant Family in 2002. That was inspired by the elephant in the book Tara that this book's based on.
Yeah.
But he was the brother... because he's passed away now in 2014. He was the brother of Camilla, the Duchess of Cornwall.
Mm-hmm.
Cornwall, not Cornwell.
Cornwall, yeah.
See, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read, like, basically just judged the book on its own. And this is something very interesting. They say when you read a book, you should go in with no preconceived notions. You should go in with no ideas of the author or what you expect from him and just let the book tell you what it is.
Can you always do that? Are you good at doing that?
Well, I think it's difficult when you know what to expect from an author or an author you know very well. But I do try to go in, if it's a new idea, you know, I try to go in not expecting anything. Because then you'll always be judging us, you know, just take it for what it is. It's not meant to be your voice. It's meant to be what the author's trying to tell you in that moment.
Does the cover, looking at the cover, not sway you thinking what kind of book it's going to be?
It does. I'd be lying if I say it doesn't. If a book has a terrible cover, unless it's got amazing reviews, you won't really pick it up, will you?
No.
So the cover is actually a very, very important part of what a book is. And you'll find that in the US and the UK, sometimes books have different titles and different book covers as well.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, whatever appeals to the audience.
I think that's one of the daftest things that's ever been said. Don't judge a book by its cover. Because we all
do. You automatically do it, don't you?
You shouldn't, right? But you do. I mean, it is what it is. It's a marketing...
yeah. And it totally doesn't go with, because they always use it in relation to don't judge a person by how they look. But it's completely different thing.
It is. I agree.
So tell me about this book. Tell me what won you over about this book.
What I like about it is the fact that it feels a little bit like a love story between him and this elephant. So I didn't think too much about the fact that he bought this elephant or this and that. And I know he's had a lot of effort and tried to preserve the elephant family. And, you know, I like the fact that you see a lot of India in the book. You know, him and Tara are going through India and they're blessed by priests and they're entertained by princesses and things like that. And then Tara, as they go through India, is kind of picking up bananas and rice and from stalls and from the ground and this and that. And Mark Shand kind of throws rupees in compensation of what Tara's doing. And so this elephant's kind of doing whatever it likes all through India in 800 miles. So I thought it was a unique way of discovering India.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Amazing. Did this, I think, in 1992.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's a long time ago.
Let's have a listen to Mark Shand actually talking about his falling in love with India and also the elephant as well.
India. Year after year, this grand, chaotic and vibrant land has lured me back. It was here that something happened which changed my life. I fell in love. Her name was Tara. She was a beautiful female Asian elephant. The monsoons are over, and I'm back with my elephant Tara at her home in central India. In 1988, my life changed when I fell in love with this elephant. I wrote a book about our travels together across her country. But more importantly, it was through Tara that I learnt that the Asian elephant could be teetering on the brink of extinction.
This is why I co-founded with my elephant and with a few other people, Elephant Family, to make sure that we could do something about this and readdress the balance.
So he's doing good. He's you know, or he was, and I'm sure his foundation is probably continuing his work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I read somewhere that his grandson, Ben Elliott, organizing rickshaw trips across India to raise money for the Elephant Family as well. So he's continuing on to support his grandfather's foundation.
He loved India.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
And listening to him there, he did a lot for the BBC as well. It's so strange. I've never come across him. Have you, Mark?
No, and I didn't know that connection with Camilla. Either.
No, I didn't until I Googled him this morning.
No idea. Yeah. Hmm.
Right, so moving on from a book that's going to make us want to travel through India to a book for the little ones when they're either next on holiday or, now normally we say even just for bedtime, but I'm not so sure. Is this a scary book?
Maybe, I feel like you would have read this when you were a little girl.
Yeah, this would have drawn me into my favourite genre of books, I think.
Definitely.
This one.
Okay, so this is one of five in the series. It's a murder series for younger middle school students. So it's about two girls. It's based in a boarding school in the 1930s. Daisy Wells and Hazel Wong, they're two friends in the boarding school, and they set up the detective society in their school.
Amazing.
So, and they go around and try to find cases to solve. There aren't many, but one day Hazel finds the body of their science teacher.
Whoa, that's heavy. Whoa. Stuff, isn't it?
Definitely.
I know, but I mean, you never know if it was real or not because they go back and it's not there. And but then they're trying to solve it. And now it's interesting because it's as much about the solving the case as it is their friendship. Because Daisy is used to being the heroine, and she's the one who started the society, and she's used to, you know, she's self-proclaimed Sherlock Holmes. So she's a little bit annoyed that Hazel's the one who found the body.
You would be.
So, you know, she's trying not to be petty because they've got to find who was guilty so that there isn't another case like this one. But it's
no one wants a math teacher to be next.
Definitely not.
Or do they?
So this book, it's written by Robin Stevens. And here she's talking about the book's two main characters, as you mentioned, Hazel and Daisy, and who they're actually based on.
Hazel and Daisy are mostly based on the friends I made when I was at school. I went to boarding school and I had a lot of friends who came from Hong Kong, like Hazel, and a lot who came from the English countryside, like Daisy. But I think that Hazel is also very much based on the person I was when I was 13, very shy, very awkward, and very bookish. I think there are lots of different qualities that different sleuths can have, but I do think you have to be observant, you have to be intelligent, and you have to be quite good at putting yourself into other people's shoes. Now, Hazel and Daisy have slightly different parts of those characteristics. Hazel is the one that always feels for the victims and the murderers, whereas Daisy's the one whose brain is ticking always, trying to work out the clues. So together, they kind of make the perfect detective.
Who are you?
I think I was Hazel, but then I grew out of my shell as I grew older.
I used to always do investigations as a kid.
Really?
Constantly. Oh. And I've told Mark this before, but I used to have a little book and I used to write down the number plates of everyone who drove into our street.
Just in case they committed a crime.
Yeah. And the type of car and who, what they looked like. I don't know
Can
where it
imagine,
is.
Can you imagine, you know, this red haired girl up at the window, pushing her nose against the window, writing down everybody's
number. Sometimes I'd have to go outside,
that
Mark.
That's funny.
If they'd already parked.
I'm
I'd
suspicious
missed it.
Of you now, Steph.
I know what car you drive.
What I really like in the book is that they've got this map of the school. So anyone who's reading it can actually go back to this map and try to envision like what leads to what room and what, where everything is. And it's followed by a list of the staff in school, what their names are and who they are.
Amazing.
And how they're in context to the story, and the name of all the girls as well. So it's
That's a great book. I don't feel like we had books like that when we were kids.
No. Great. But what's it called again?
So it's called Murder Most Unladylike, but it's also been published under the name of, hold on one second, I wrote this down, Bad Manners, Murder is Bad Manners.
Okay.
So this is again the US, UK bit, but I've got the Murder Most Unlikely copy.
And the youngest age you would read that to, do you reckon?
Definitely not below 12.
Okay, 12 and up. Fantastic, I love that one.
The Radio Book Club. Members only.
Not into crimes.
No.
Into books instead, eh?
Definitely. Ahlam is joining us from the festival. She's the festival director of the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. And you're going to be taking us into the kitchen next.
Yes, I will. I'm sorry for everyone who's fasting.
I know. And that's what I said to you. I was like, are you sure you want to do this during Ramadan?
But actually, you know, there's a lot of people at home cooking for iftar.
Yeah.
So, true.
It's not like we don't interact with food at all. You have to. You have to prepare food and you're smelling it and you can't taste it.
Oh, that must be so difficult.
I know.
So we are traveling into the kitchen with a celebrity this week.
Yes. It's All Easy by Gwyneth Paltrow. Her first book, which was My Father's Daughter, was quite popular, and it was full of recipes from their childhood of what her dad used to make. But this one is followed in popular demand. So it was a New York Times bestseller, this one. 125 easy recipes for people who are just busy and just, you know, if you're a parent, whether you're working, whether whatever. So the book does have some healthy recipes, but it also, you know, so it has the gluten-free, it has the dairy-free desserts and things like that, but it also has recipes with the standard ingredients, so whether it's cheese or regular flour, because it's just easier. It's easier to find those things, and sometimes you're just not bothered to.
I do feel like she's going away from her core with this, though, because her whole thing was being a vegan and really pushing that forward, and it feels like she's done this maybe just to sell more books, which she is selling more books, which is great.
Yeah, she did say, she said, I spoke with all of my friends to talk about what is the kind of thing that they want. So this definitely isn't an all Gwyneth recipe book. I think she's listened a little bit to what the people want.
Yeah. That's fair enough, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah. And, you know, if time isn't something that you've got a lot of, then this is the perfect book. Mm-hmm. Here's Gwyneth talking about actually how she got into cooking.
I started to learn how to cook when I was about 19. I was going to University of California at Santa Barbara, and I was trying to be an actress as well, so I kept driving down to LA to audition for movies, and my dad was there working. We sort of started getting into cooking together. We got sick of the frozen meatballs that were left in the freezer for us. It just became our thing, so we started watching a lot of cooking channels. And over the years, it's become a major passion.
So her and her dad.
Is anyone thinking, put the knives down, Gwyneth?
Yeah, she's sharpening the knives, getting ready.
Steph is such a detective.
They're sharp enough. She says every recipe in this book takes a shorter amount of time to make than it does to order a takeaway. That's the claim, which is quite good.
Yeah. And I believe her. Like some of the things that she's got in there, Moroccan chicken salad wrap, which is great because you can make a Moroccan chicken salad for dinner, make a bit extra, turn it into a wrap the next day, and that's a fantastic lunch for work.
Kimchi fried rice stands out to me as a staple.
I love
easy
kimchi.
Yeah, it's the best, isn't it?
Yeah,
as like
great.
A staple thing that you could make on a night time if you didn't have too much time after work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it easy?
I imagine it's just fried rice and then you throw the kimchi in.
If it's in this book, it's easy. It's all easy.
Yeah, no, I really like this. I might actually get this book myself.
Yeah, it could be an alternative to my Jamie Oliver book, the five ingredients, this one.
Which Mark got on Radio Book Club and he loves it.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Lap it up. Yeah.
Big fan. Are you still cooking from that all the time?
I am, yeah. Yeah, not as much, but I am doing. I've not had much time.
Oh, it's died off, innit?
No, it's not died. Well, maybe that's where Gwyneth can step in.
That's true.
I think I'd perhaps rather look at pictures of Gwyneth cooking than I would have of Jamie Oliver.
Yeah, possibly. Do you have one of those little things for your kitchen that keeps the book open as well?
No. I want one of those.
My friend's got one, and I moved into her house, and it's amazing.
Where'd she get that from?
I don't know.
Ask her, please.
Yeah, I will. It's really good. It just keeps the book open at the right page, so you can just look and you don't have to touch anything when your hands are all sticky. It's good.
I know.
Oh, that's cool.
I'll let you know next week.
All right. Now, you said you got a musical book for me.
Yes, I do. You're going to love this one. It's called Something Wonderful, about Rodgers and Hammerstein, who made a revolution in Broadway. And it's written by Todd S. Purdom.
I don't think this is going to stand up to Phil Collins in Mark's mind.
No, I mean, these guys were prolific composers, there's no two ways. When you look at the list of the musicals that they've written, including The Sound of Music.
Yes, exactly. Those songs, the power of those songs have not died. Yeah.
The King and I, Oklahoma, Carousel.
Maybe I'm wrong. Could it be this year's biography?
I don't know. Maybe I was looking for something a little bit more young and contemporary. But you never know. I could get into this.
You never know. So it's, obviously these two musical geniuses, they laid the landscape for Broadway and West End. So they discovered this new, what didn't exist before. It's a new art form, which was the serious musical play. And you get to know a lot about their relationship because the two of them didn't necessarily get along very well, but they kept a very good front. Because their business was so lucrative and their business was a big, big success.
Like Mark and I.
I don't think we can turn out songs quite like Rodgers and Hammerstein.
So, yeah, I mean, they were powerhouses. They've changed the face of American, radio and stage and screen and TV after, in the post-war era. And what they've done is amazing. And it's good because it's a bit of musical history, but it's not too historical. It's a bit revealing in terms of their relationship, almost a little bit gossipy. So,
all right. So Todd Purdom is the author of this book. And here he talks about, the power of the music and lyrics of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
I'm delighted to have spent the past 3.5 years working on the book. I didn't intend it to be an antidote to the grimness of our current American culture, but it has proved to be that. And I think if I just say a few titles, you'll understand why. Oh, What a Beautiful Morning. People will say we're in love. It might as well be spring. This was a real nice clam bake. Some Enchanted Evening. There's Nothing Like a Dame. Hello, Young Lovers. Shall We Dance? Climb Every Mountain, The Sound of Music. Those titles, those songs, those stories are woven into the warp and woof of American life in a way that anybody who is in this room, I'm sure, and people who are younger than anyone who's here, and people who are much older than anyone who's here, won't need any explanation for. But even I was somewhat surprised to learn, as I did my research, the sheer reach and breadth and the extent of Rodgers and Hammerstein's dominance of mid-20th century popular culture in America. And I begin the book with an account of them at the peak of their powers when they were producing an original television musical for CBS, Cinderella, starring Julie Andrews in 1957. And it was a one-time color broadcast, not preserved on videotape, which wasn't yet perfected. And it aired on the Sunday evening of March 31st, 1957, the 14th anniversary of the opening of Oklahoma. It displaced the Ed Sullivan Show. And it was seen by 107 million people at a time when the population of the country was 172 million people. John Cypher, who played the Prince Charming and later went on to fame as the police chief in Hill Street Blues, walked out of the studio in Upper Manhattan in the middle of the broadcast, and on this rainy Sunday evening, the streets were completely deserted. He said it was as if a neutron bomb had gone off and killed all the people but left the building standing. And he realized that was because everybody was inside watching the show.
That's amazing.
They must have some great stories. He has got the way of speaking I would not want to get into an argument with him.
That's true.
You know what I mean? He's just so clever.
I'm right. Yeah.
And right.
This is the way it is.
Yeah. But I think this is going to sound stereotypical, but a lot of Americans are good at arguing. And my husband watches a lot of basketball, and you see the sports arguments that happen and the type of things that they bring into it. They just, they have an art for argument, I think.
They do. Don't they do debating at school as a thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't have that at my school.
No, they do in a lot of British colleges, though.
They do now.
Yeah, but I never got into it either. No.
Mm. It's great. I would love to watch some debates.
Although, I'm quite good at arguing now.
So it sounds like a really interesting book, this one, if you're musically inclined.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So have we swayed you?
I think you have. Maybe I'll do two books this year.
I doubt it. No. Don't make promises. Can't deliver. So that's your book for the plane today. It's called Something Wonderful by Rodgers and Hammerstein's Broadway Revolution.
The Radio Book Club. Members only.
Now, when it comes to travelling home from work, you need a book that's not going to be something that you have to really concentrate on for a good 15 minutes. You want something you can jump in and out of, don't you?
Yeah.
And you've gone for one that's perfect for this.
It is. It's perfect. It's one of my all-time favorite books, if I may say. It's one that's not left my bedside since I was 22. It is one that is my guide through life.
When really?
Yes, absolutely. When I'm trying to understand things or big important matters in life and how to get through it or how to think about them. Khalil Gibran is a genius, and he's one of the Arab authors, one of the few, maybe the first Arab author who's become global in the way that he has, because he's written as powerfully in English as he did in Arabic. This is The Prophet. A lot of people will know this book. It's no secret. It's not new.
So it was originally published back in 1923, is that right?
Yes.
Wow, it's great when books are still relevant today.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you're a youngster, and it's still on your bedside table. That's incredible.
Oh, I love Gibran. Gibran is someone my husband is jealous of, because I always tell him, I'm like, Gibran has left enough soul to be the soulmate of so many people who read him for generations, and he's like,
Wow. So over 40 languages this book is now in.
Yes, and, this is an amazing book. I think a lot of his other books in Arabic need credit, but they just haven't been translated, which is just a shame. I hope they do in the future. But this book, particularly, The Prophet, the storyline is in the city of Orphalese, there's a prophet called Al-Mustafa. And after 12 years of waiting for his ship to go back to his birthplace, the ship has finally arrived. And the symbolism there is that the ship is his afterlife, taking him to the afterlife.
Ah.
And while he's walking to the ship that he's walked, and he sees the people of Orphalese, and they ask him questions. They say, Al-Mustafa, tell us of children. And then he says kind of a page or two on the philosophy, very poetically, about philosophy of children. And he says, well, tell us of love. And then he talks about love. Tell us of marriage. Tell us of, eating and drinking. Tell us of joy and sorrow. And he kind of talks about all of those things.
Do you have a favorite?
One of my favorite is about children, and it says, and a woman who held a baby against her bosom said, speak to us of children. And he says, your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, they do not belong to you.
That's amazing,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is amazing.
Yeah, so it's filled of many short stories and poems.
Yes, so it's the Mustafa's view, or Khalil Gibran's view, on the important things in life, and he it's great because you can pick whichever subject you want and just read that on that day.
Yeah.
Guess what year this book sold its millionth copy in? What Have year? A guess.
1965.
Close. Do any better?
68.
57.
Ooh.
Really? It sold a million copies.
Isn't that incredible?
Wow. 1957. It's also, there was an animated movie brought out, and the actress Salma Hayek, she lent her voice for one of the characters in the animated version of the film. And she discovered the book through her grandfather.
I used to see this book always there, and I memorized there is a very enigmatic man in the cover. I guess because it was next to his bed. It reminded me of him. And I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know it was a Lebanese author. My father spoke Spanish with a very, very heavy Arabic accent. And he smoked cigars. And he was the best grandfather ever. He was so good to me. But I didn't get to know him very well. So later on, when I found the book in life and I read it, I got to learn a lot about who he was. Just the fact that he was reading this book. And to me, it felt like he was talking to me through the book. And he was helping me through life and teaching me about life through the book. So it's been obviously very, very special to me.
Salma Hayek there. Yeah. That's beautiful, isn't it?
It is. Mm.
Now I'm feeling like I'm missing out because it's not on my bedside cabinet.
You have to get it.
I need to get a copy.
And what's amazing is that Gibran was also an artist, so he has mystical illustrations through the book that reflect the text as well. And it's been brought into the animation in a very clever way as well. She's done a really good job.
Right. Okay, excellent book there then. We've just got time to squeeze in a podcast very quickly. So what have you got for us?
I've got The Art of Charm, a very popular podcast, top 50 on iTunes, more than 800 episodes, 3.5 million downloads a month apparently. And it's on a subject that I think is really, really important. It's on mastering the human dynamics and relationships. Which is something that if you do well or if you always try to improve, that it will benefit you in any area of life, if it's personal, professional, anything. And the two hosts have 11 years of life coaching experience together, Johnny Zuback and AJ Herbinger. And they have guests like Shaquille O'Neal, Sam Harris, who is a neuroscientist, philosopher and author, Leila Ali, which is a world boxing champion. So they've got some interesting guests on the show. And the couple of episodes that I listened to were about whether you're a perfectionist or not, and how do you know, and what are the pros and cons, how to take accountability for your goals and your dreams, how to lead with value so that you're only attracting people of value in your life and kind of do without the others. But some really, really important skills.
And I think this is the kind of thing that a lot of kids lack these days, isn't it? These personal skills.
With technology playing such a heavy role all over us. Human skills are becoming
falling
less
by the wayside. Mm-hmm.
When I saw the name of this podcast, I instantly thought of you. How grateful you'd be.
The Art of Charm. Yeah, I need a little bit of this. And I chose one that the guys are actually talking about, you know, keeping conversations going and keeping them alive. Have a listen.
It's probably one of the most common questions we get on the program too, is how do I keep a conversation going, right? I've read online how to start a conversation. I've listened to the podcast and I know how to say hello, but there are these lulls in conversation and I don't know how to guide things, or sometimes I draw a blank. So this problem really presents itself because we're not listening. And all of the conversation cues happen on a verbal and nonverbal level. So when I say listening, I don't just mean with your ears. I also mean with your eyes. We're not paying attention to people's facial expressions and the emotion that is coming through what they're saying. So that's what we really want to focus on, is how to become a better listener, because the best conversationalists we've met in our lives are incredible listeners, and they find those ways to relate to you in a relatively easy fashion.
What do you mean by listening specifically? Johnny, do you want to kind of define what listening is? Because I think a lot of people think listening is sitting there until the other person is done talking.
Listening is a part of it, but there's another component to that. I use this analogy of a guy on the home plate on the batter's box, right? Baseball. And we all like to think, you know, that we're very good listeners, and if we hear the right thing, that we can have a witty, snappy comeback, and the girl or whoever we're speaking with is going to think we're the most hilarious, amazing person on the planet. And so we're always focusing on trying to hit the home run. And so we ask a question, and then we get a pitch coming in, and we don't like that answer. We don't have anything zingy, witty to go with that. So we ask another question. And the thing is, it's getting out of the thinking of trying to smack a home run and getting into the thinking of just getting on base, just getting a grounder. Just move the conversation along. Quit looking for the home run, the snappy, witty comeback, the zinger that's going to have her laughing so hard, or the guy that you've just met thinking you're the coolest person in the world, and move the conversation forward.
Just be yourself.
This is like our job, though, isn't it?
Kind of.
You must be listening. Do you know what? I read an article once, and it was in a men's magazine, mm-hmm. and it was how they can make the woman in their life believe that they're listening. And I read it and thought, this is great, because obviously it's going to work on men as well. And it said that you should always repeat, when they tell you something, you should always say something back to them that repeats a bit of what they said.
Okay.
So, for instance, they'll say, oh, I had a really hard day at work today, and someone stole my pen. And you go, oh, it's really terrible when someone steals your pen. And then you move on.
So you keep doing
to what
that.
What you want to talk about.
You keep doing that in the conversation. Yeah. Love it.
Well, they're doing it to us.
Yeah.
My sister does that with me because I tend to zone out when she's talking to me. And then she'll say, and then an elephant was jumping. And this, and I'll be like, oh, wow. And she's like, did you hear what I just said?
Aslan, what's the name of that podcast once again?
The Art of Charm.
We all need it, I think.
I think we do. You'll be charming us again next week. We'll see you then.
See you then. Take care.
Bye.
See you
later.
Radio Book Club. There's just so much more to hear. Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.